Good afternoon. This is Michael Osterlink, and I'm speaking with Jeff Clements. He is the author of the new book, Corporations Are Not People, Why They Have More Rights Than You Do, and What You Can Do About It. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Not bad. Yourself?
Good, thanks.
Excellent. Well, before we jump into the book, tell us a little about you, Jeff, and what led you to write a book.
Well, I am a lawyer in Concord, Massachusetts, and I have spent time both in the private sector and in the Attorney General's office in Massachusetts. And, you know, one of the things I've seen in my 25-year practice is a real transformation of our Constitution and our country, really, in favor of massive global corporations. And I'm not talking about small business. I'm talking about big global corporations and the American people and the relative voice we have in our government. And you know, I experienced a lot of that at the Attorney General's in litigating cases involving the tobacco industry or other public policy type of cases, and defending laws that the public had passed and that there turned out to be a corporate trump card called corporate speech, and these laws would be challenged in court. And after the debates had been had, the legislature decided, we would be in court. Not because people had a complaint that the law infringed their rights, because big corporations like Monsanto or Philip Morris felt that they interfered with these models, but they would call it corporate speech, and they held a constitutional trump card. So, you know, a lot of people don't really know that and how it happened and what it for our country and whether we ought to do something about it. So that's what I wrote the book about.
Your new book is entitled Corporations Are Not People, Well, They Have More Rights Than You Do, and What You Can Do About It. So you mentioned the history, this change that you've noticed over the past 30 or so years. Can you walk us through briefly this history, some of the major cases, and how it has shifted?
Yeah. Now, you know, I like to think of it in context of really all of American history, because in some ways, what we are dealing with is really very new, and in other ways, it's part of being an American citizen, and that's dealing with aggregations of power and wealth, and making sure government of the people and in a Republican democracy actually work. So, you know, we have old stories of corporate personhood or corporate power back through American history, and we have responses of the American people with constitutional and other mechanisms to make sure that the people always had the final say. And so we're really talking about a modern version that goes back to about 1978. Was really the first case when First National Bank of Boston, Gillette Corporation, and Digital Corporation challenged a Massachusetts law that had decided, the law said that citizens' referendum votes that have nothing to do with corporations or their property, corporations are not allowed to spend corporate money to influence the outcome. Just the idea was let the people have their debate, make their votes, and see where it comes out. Well, they challenged that law under the First Amendment as a corporate speech infringement. And until then, really, there had been no such thing as corporate speech. It was something human beings did. And courts distinguish between human beings who might own shares in a corporation or run corporations and their constitutional right to speak, which was something different. So this was really the first time. It was a 5-4 decision. Lewis Powell wrote the decision. He'd been a former Chamber of Commerce lawyer on the board of Philip Morris and 12 other massive corporations. And interestingly, the dissent had, yes, it had Thurgood Marshall, a liberal, but it also had written a very powerful dissent, William Rehnquist, a very conservative justice, who said that this is a grave mistake, that corporations have a valid and strong place in the economic sphere, but the people are entitled to decide that there is danger in letting them leverage that power in the political sphere. And he wrote dissents in all of the corporate rights cases of the following years, in which, again, Justice Powell led a very narrow majority hold in not just in that political context, but in context like you know, corporations being trying where New York state policy would try to get utility corporations to stop promoting energy during the energy crisis, and the state policy was conservation. Those laws were struck down as violations of corporate speech. Tobacco warnings. One of the most egregious, in my view, is Monsanto striking down a state law that required disclosure in dairy products that came from cows that were treated with Monsanto's genetically modified drug. Now, this is a drug that's illegal in every democracy in the world except the United States. It's the FDA, again, banned everywhere except the U.S. Well, Vermont wasn't proposing to ban. They wanted we, the people, to be able to decide when we bought our dairy products, our yogurt, our milk, do we want the one that came from cows treated with genetically modified organisms, or did we want the natural one? That and essentially, that case said, we're not entitled to know which is which. We're not entitled to require Monsanto to put that on the labels. And to me, that's why I say they have more rights than we do. It's not like this is some price we have to pay for our Constitution. We've lost our Constitution, and now we're expected to be in the dark and just eat what's fed to us. And that's a serious problem, in my view.
Well, let's, for devil's advocate purposes, what arguments were made and would be made by the tobacco companies or Monsanto? Monsanto might be a different case because that was for information. That was requiring them to put out some information that was factual about their product. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Are there some of the other cases you mentioned different in orientation, not just about factual information about a particular product?
Well, you know, they're different in some ways, and you know, you wanted to play devil's advocate. I think the best argument on the other side is the First Amendment. Is a limitation on government and says Congress shall pass no law infringing speech. And so that's what the amendment says. And some business regulation, corporate regulations, infringe corporate conduct, which if we accept the metaphor, becomes speech. And so examples would be, you know, required disclosures in the Monsanto case. You know, nobody could... the government can't require you or me or groups of us to go around telling people about us. That's up to us if we want to do it. So if we accept that corporations are people, then they have that right too. And that's where things have gone astray with tobacco companies and corporations and Monsanto. But take the you know, utility corporation case there. It wasn't requiring them to disclose the law. It was your law. It was during the energy crisis. I'd say we still have an energy crisis, but it was back in the late 70s. And the utility corporations wanted to advertise their products and promote the sale of electricity and boost profits for their shareholders. And the state was saying, no, you can't do that. Because we have a policy of conservation. So if you accept that the monopoly corporation in New York has the same right to raise a First Amendment challenge, yeah, that looks like government passing a law that infringes information. It says don't promote energy consumption. And if you accept that the First Amendment analysis as well, you know, everybody should get to hear the information and we can decide for ourselves, then you begin to feel like, yeah, the government shouldn't be depriving us of information. We're smart enough to figure it out, and we won't use energy if it's not a good idea. Sort of the argument where, you know, I think people do rightly get uncomfortable when government is saying information is okay and what isn't. But we also need to be very careful about letting metaphors of corporations as being just like people run away from us, because there is a fundamental distinction, and we're not really talking about information. We're talking about the right of all of us to decide really what's good policy for us, and if no human being has a right in first, I think you know, Republican democracy is all about.
Yeah, see, I can see a distinction or a difference, for instance, with the Monsanto case, because they are providing a product which is outside of the norm, and that would be important for consumers to know that they're actually ingesting a product different than what they'd expect in the marketplace with that particular product, in this case genetically modified. But with the utility company, it seems they're restrained on their ability to promote their product. I mean, couldn't the government decide, you know, today we don't like fat, which they do, or we don't like sugar, which they will, hopefully, you know, which they might or will do in the future, or they don't like some kind of food product, so we're not going to allow you to promote that food product because it goes contrary to the USDA dietary guidelines, you know, or something along those lines. I mean, would you see the differences between those two types of cases? And if so,
yeah.
How do you deal with that in light of constitutional protections for individuals, and you're calling for those same protections are not available to corporations?
And I do agree that those are different issues, and you know, I don't want government telling me what I can and what I can't do any more than the next guy. But I think we should be careful of sort of slippery arguments. You know, one day it's energy, next day it's fat. You know, this energy issue has led us to endless wars in the Middle East. The planet at peril. 500 mountains no longer exist in Appalachia, you know, a region that belongs to all Americans. 500 mountains are gone because of mountaintop coal removal, and 2,500 miles of streams where people used to fish and hunt are gone because they've dumped the mountain into those streams. So, you know, it's not like when we're talking about what human beings do. You know, human beings don't eliminate mountains and lead to global empire to defend supplies from overseas when we could have rational policy debate of what is the right amount of energy consumption that we ought to be encouraging. To me, that's just not a human constitutional issue. It's a public policy debate. I respect those views, whether it's yours or others, who say, no, well, you know, I don't think that limiting information is the right way to do it. I respect that view. I wouldn't agree with it in every case, but I respect it and would be happy to live with the outcome of a fair debate and a vote on that. What I don't accept is that if the large global utility corporation loses the debate and the vote, there's a constitutional trump card, just as if, you know, we're limiting human activity or human debate, or human speech, which is just not the case. So that's the distinction I make. I think it's important at the threshold that we decide, are we talking human beings or are we talking about corporations? Because they're really two different things. And nobody is going to limit anybody's right to march and form groups to advocate energy consumption or fat consumption or sugar consumption or anything else. What we're talking about is the difference between, you know, corporate conduct on a corporate scale where they get benefits and privileges from the government in order to do that, and human activity.
Well, couldn't the argument be made, and it is made by many, that all corporations are associations of individuals, and they're just expressing those views of their board or their stock owners or their employees or their management?
Yeah, they could make the argument, but, you know, with all due respect, it would be wrong. It's just not so. You know, we can associate anywhere we want. We can form a business. We can together form a group. We can do any kind of association, and I'm in no way suggesting that be limited in any way whatsoever. What a corporation is, though, by definition, is down to the government and asking for a favor. A corporation exists because government sets up certain rules for incorporation, which can only be done by government. Nobody can form a private without government corporation. You get limited liability, you get perpetual life, act as a corporation because the government says you can, and you go down to the Secretary of State and pay your fee and get your papers. So it isn't just an association by definition. So once we accept that these are useful tools of policy, useful government-created entities for our economy and all kinds of other things, which I happen to think they are, then we can also decide, you know, what are the best ways to make them work for our society. And so You know, it's just there's a big difference that we have to just keep in mind these distinctions between human beings, unincorporated associations of human beings, and corporations. And again, I'm not talking about the many, many, many small businesses that form corporations. They don't have the capital or the will to take over our government and our policies and our politicians in the same way that global corporations that really have no allegiance to the U.S. Have. So I think the question we all face is, are we allowed to draw lines? And I think we are. We're allowed to say, you know, those are two different things. One needs more oversight than another.
Let me just go back so I'm really clear. So corporations are artificial creations of the state. They're not found in nature. Whereas human beings, or at least Americans' rights, well, actually all human beings, but just for Americans' sake, because it's recognized for Americans, our rights are given to us by God or in the nature of us as human beings and precede the state, and the state was just formed to protect those rights. Therefore, artificial creatures of the state are not deserving of the same types of protections as individual human beings because they are not individual human beings.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think you, Michael, summarized really the premise of the American, which is our rights and our self-government come from us as human beings. They come but not after. So, if corporations, by definition, don't come until after government and from government, by definition, they really aren't among we the people and our rights and our duties as citizens.
You said something a little bit ago that leads me to the question of, does size matter? And I know you answered it because you started answering that size does matter. How do you make a distinction between, in terms of protecting the ability of small businesses to act freely in the market versus big businesses, I don't know what the size differential might be, that then can go to the state, receive favors at the expense of both consumers, citizens, and the small businesses. Does your analysis provide protections in the end for the small businesses against kind of the corporate state?
Well, I think it would enable us to get to the place where we would actually have a free market and protection for innovation and small business that we don't have now and that the Supreme Court were not allowed to have. And let me explain, if I can. The size absolutely matters. And to give some sense of the size, the crony capitalism that's resulting now because some global corporations have the capital to waste from, and it's not a waste, actually, it's a pretty good investment in Washington and politicians and in lobbying, they get the playing field tilted in their favor. And most small businesses, even mid-sized businesses, and even some large businesses just don't have the capital to keep up. And some examples, Lockheed, Northrop Grumman, and Wayne, who get billions of dollars in government contracts and military contracts, have spent more than $400 million on lobbying in the last 10 years. GE Corporations has spent $237 million. And if this was going on in another country and we were trying to, set up some effective democracy over there, there's no way we would accept that it was working for a small business competitive marketplace of free people. If some large aggregations of power and wealth were able to throw hundreds of millions of dollars at their government and think they're going to get a level playing field, we're not. And I think that's why we're seeing the kind of job outsourcing we've seen in the last two decades. We're seeing that it's very tough for small business and startups compared to how it used to be. The regulatory playing field, one of the old tricks is those who can get lobbyists to do it is to make it applicable to everybody as if size doesn't matter so that the, farmer with a couple of employees has to compete with, the big agribusiness corporations and has the same kind of rules applied as if they're needed in the same way, and they're not at all. So, I'm sympathetic when small business complaints about regulation, but that isn't a reason to get rid of regulation. It's to apply regulation rationally to massive entities that actually need it, or else they're going to cause grave harm to the country compared to the smaller businesses that don't. So if we have an amendment to the Constitution, which I would propose to reverse this new, you know, this new creation of a corporate constitutional person, it wouldn't be a magic solution, but what it would do is free us all to have a good debate and figure out what is the best balance, where should we regulate and where should we not. You know, that question I don't think is ever answered, but in a healthy, you know, Republican democracy, we sort it through and we adjust and we move forward in a way that where everybody wins, I think.
This is Michael Osterlink, and I'm speaking with Jeff Clements. He's the author of Corporations Are Not People, Why They Have More Rights Than You Do, and What You Can Do About It. Jeff, I know people are going to want to go buy your book and learn more about your work. How can they do that?
Well, Corporations Are Not People is the name of the book, and corporationsarenotpeople.com is where I'm blogging, and people can keep up to date on things, and I hope will comment and get involved in this debate, which is breaking out all over the country, and is a real important one. And you can buy the book at any online or local bookstore, and this link is corporationsarenotpeople.com.
Great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Michael. Great to talk with you, as always.